You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week is our second week of Eurovision, our newly named and newly regular segment where I'll be catching up with our European correspondent Cameron Mulgan. This morning, Cameron joined me from London and we spoke about the developments in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, what that's looking like on the ground for refugees around Europe, and we also talked a little bit about International Women's Day. Here we are now.
So last week you gave us an update on the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So much has happened since then, which has been widely covered on the station and pretty much everywhere. But before we get down to some details on that, can you fill me in on what's happened over the past week and especially over the weekend?
Yeah. So yes, a lot has happened. The UN report that over 1,200 civilians have been killed since the invasion began less than 2 weeks ago, although that actual death toll is likely to be much higher. Today, the southern city of Melitopol and the southern port city of Kherson are in Russian army control. And on Friday in Europe, we woke up to news that parts of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant were on fire due to Russian shelling. Luckily, it was just a training building. This is Europe's largest nuclear power plant, and it's been reported it's now under full Russian control. This has caused the International Atomic Energy Agency to express deep concerns that the Russian military are interfering with the everyday running of the plant. Going east, the port city of Mariupol is currently under siege with continued fighting. Up to 200,000 people are still there, and they've reported to be stuck without power and water for days. And intense aerial bombardment continues in the second largest city of Kharkiv. Today, humanitarian corridors have finally been implemented in the towns of Sumy and Irpin, where thousands are fleeing. That's including 1,200 international students in Sumy. There were reports over the weekend to create these humanitarian corridors, but they were hampered by Russian shelling. The New York Times captured some pretty horrific footage of a family being killed by Russian shelling as they tried to leave Irpin, which is a town northwest of Kiev. Today, they tried again in Mariupol to set up a humanitarian corridor, but Ukraine has accused Russia of shelling it again.
There's a masses of numbers that are trying to leave Ukraine, and we spoke last week about some of the routes they're taking. Can you give me some rough numbers on those that have been able to leave and maybe a picture of what that looks like on the ground in the cities that are able to take refugees in?
Yeah. So I mean, this is the largest and kind of most sudden wave of refugees in Europe since World War II. The UNHCR today reports that over 2 million people have now fled the conflict. And UNICEF say that over half of them are children. There was an 11-year-old boy yesterday reported to have traveled over 1,000 kilometres alone to the Slovakian border with just a phone number of his with relatives of his hand. And again, just to say, like, men between 18 to 60 are being mobilized, so they have to stay behind. So there's been lots of emotional images of kind of fathers dropping off their wives and children at various borders before they go back to fight. So in terms of numbers, over 1.2 million in Poland, 140,000 in Slovakia, 190,000 in Hungary, over 80,000 each in Romania and Moldova, and over 200,000 in other European countries. And in Berlin last week, there were really emotional scenes. So you had thousands of Ukrainians arriving just on everyday trains or on trains from Poland at Berlin Central Station. You had volunteers greeting them with food while others kind of held up cardboard signs saying, like, you know, one mother, one child, 2 weeks. It's quite affecting, really, to see this in your home city. And I've got friends myself who are hosting people on their couches or in their rooms. In terms of the EU support, so that temporary protection directive I spoke about last week has passed. Yep. So that's giving refugees at least 1 year of protection in the EU. So that means they can live and work and get medical care, although that's only now for Ukrainian nationals. Russians as well have been fleeing their countries because of fears for a new kind of iron curtain dropping down and the kind of increasing authoritarian laws being dropped. So because European airspace is closed to Russian aircraft, they've got limited options. Those with European visas and also not a Sputnik vaccination, which is the main one in Russia, they can drive over the border across the Finnish or the Baltic states, or others have to catch very expensive flights to Georgia, Turkey, or Armenia.
And I believe you're joining us from London at the moment. What's it like there for you? How are people sort of responding?
Yeah. So the mood here on the ground is very pro-Ukraine, at least in London. I assume the rest of the UK. A YouGov poll on the 2nd of March showed an increasing number of Britons supporting taking in refugees. Currently it's at 76%. And you know, in the past few days when the poll was taken, opposition fell from 18 to 11%, and numbers people on shore dropped from 19 to 30%. Around the streets, you know, you see a lot of Ukrainian colors. I've seen flower wreaths, blue and yellow in shop fronts. You know, pro-Ukrainian or anti-Putin posters and graffiti. I saw like a few St. Javelin posters, which is a kind of an online meme. And also some big graffiti at Crystal Palace saying like, "Oi, Putin, behave," which I thought was kind of funny. But I think this this mood is in contrast to the actual support Ukrainian refugees have been given from the UK government, although kind of unsurprising. So the current policy, or the main policy, is to take in those with family members living inside the UK. We're about 200,000 Ukrainians are estimated to be valid for this. But they're currently bogged down by a lot of paperwork and checks. As of today, only 500 visas have been issued so far. And over the weekend, it was only 50. So Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, she's faced pretty significant criticism from this, including from her own party. You've got, you know, refugees stuck in Calais. And today, Labour MP Diane Abbott said it was cruel and chaotic. I think this is pretty unsurprising, though, because this is a party which created a hostile environment for illegal immigrants. The Windrush scandal and even on the 26th of February, the immigration minister, in a now deleted tweet, Kevin Foster, you know, he suggested Ukrainians could come in as seasonal workers to pick fruit. And I think it's really interesting to think about how Brexit has been affecting people as well. So The Guardian today released a really good interview with a British husband with a Ukrainian wife. So he's kind of stuck in Poland, but he can only be there for 90 days. But until his wife gets processed, they can't join him. So it's pretty bad. And just a few hours ago as well, Zelensky made a pretty historic speech via video link to the House of Commons, where he called for more support from the UK. And I'm sure you'll probably report on it today, you know, a very kind of Churchill-like speech saying, you know, we'll fight in the forests, on the roads, on the beaches and on the streets.
Are there any updates on Ukraine's EU application that we spoke about last week? And I believe some surrounding countries have also applied.
Yeah. So everything's changing very quickly. And the EU, you know, normally very slow moving stuff has happened. So last week, Moldova and Georgia also applied to join the EU. And on Monday, the EU announced that they will formally assess the applications for Ukraine, Georgia and Moldova to join the bloc. This is a symbolic step, but it means the EU can now launch a formal kind of application process after initially being quite hesitant to expand. Apparently there's a summit later this week where EU leaders will discuss this further. And Politico have reported that some kinds of privileges or partnership agreements could be announced. This is unlikely. Like, there's probably not too much progress which will happen, to be honest, apart from maybe some initial funding, because, you know, EU membership involves implementing thousands of laws for regulatory alignment, as well as anti-corruption initiatives and lots of other stuff. And you still have other countries which are still as a candidate. So, you know, Albania, North Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia and Turkey. And just another kind of quick EU news, which was announced today, the EU Commission have said that they want to slash imports of Russian gas by 2/3 by 2023. So yeah, maybe we can talk about that next week.
Yeah. I had to buy a bike last week because it cost me the same amount of money as it did to fill up my car with gas. So
damn.
we're certainly feeling the effect. So hey, thanks, Cameron. Yeah. We have a little bit of time left. It's Wednesday here, but still Tuesday over there for you in the evening. So it's still International Women's Day, which is a really wonderful thing to celebrate. Are there any highlights on your side celebrating Wahine in the EU?
Yeah. So in Berlin, it's actually a public holiday, which is kind of cool. So there were quite a few marches around the place for gender equality. In Italy, there was a general strike amongst transport services calling for better pay conditions and ending workplace discrimination, as well as lots of other kind of smaller events happening around Europe. And the Council of Europe yesterday reported that apparently in the past year, there's been some improvements in some member states for the gender pay gap. However, more effort and specifically by men is needed to be done.
That was our European correspondent, Cameron Mulgan, speaking to me about the Russian invasion of Ukraine and International Women's Day. If you do want to listen to UK President Zelensky's speech to UK Parliament that Cameron spoke about, it's really easy to find on YouTube, and I would really recommend doing that when you can. It's a very poignant and emotive speech, and I think quite important for each of us to watch and listen to. Make sure you tune in next week as Cameron and I keep covering the situation in Ukraine and what it's like being on the ground in Europe.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.